Welcome to Polycast, the civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Vian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host,
Bruton.
That's so much potential. I don't know which option to pick to say. I think none because we're alive.
With my blatant lack of enthusiasm, please welcome to episode 243, Dan.
I'll raise your enthusiasm.
Makalua.
That's not what you're supposed to be raising.
Matt Jin.
Got your flag right here.
And the main team.
What I'm raising is your city.
And I'm Rugen. Welcome to the show.
Civilization Online to be launched on December 2nd.
Let's all play, guys.
Woo!
Online.
So, we gotta move to
builders.
Korea first. We have to move to Korea first.
just proxy. Or no, I think we needed a friend in Korea, right? That's how it worked.
Oh, Lisa!
Please get one Korean friend. This is how we get people to not just play the game, but to get more friends for Koreans.
Well, that's what that other article said. So.
Yeah, I know. We talked about that last episode. Yeah,
you need to be live in Korea or have a friend in Korea. Like, what?
Yeah, we discussed the open beta dates for Civilization Online from developer XL Games. By the time the post-produced version of this episode recording is released, the title will have been launched. Phil already mentioned the date. It was announced at a press conference on November 25th. We are confident that we have developed a very entertaining game based on the renowned strategy series. We will continue to develop extra content for the game and provide updates in the future. That's XL Games CEO Jake Song. The game has been in development for 5 years and, according to them, cost a little over $43 million to develop over that time. There is no cost to play, at least during the open beta test in December, and a marketplace, however, will be selling some items, but the extent or even examples of those items was not discussed. I enjoyed this comment in particular. We did not develop Civilization Online simply to make money. We have designed the game to allow users to enjoy it, even when they do not pay for it. And I feel like the next thought is, but we would enjoy it even more if you do pay for it. So we actually start recouping some of this $43 million we put up front and would like to then make money after that. The senior game producer at 2K Games, Garrett Bittner, spoke to the extent of Civilization Online's global availability, confirming early reports to quote-unquote roll out the game on the island of Taiwan, as well as in Hong Kong and Macau. But for now, we plan to focus on the successful launch of the game in Korea first, quote-unquote. That seems like a good idea. And we know that XL Games has not to do with the managing of Civilization Online in anything but Korea. But they did develop the game, and of course, 2K Games owns the IP and will oversee the publishing and the management of it going forward. So I guess my one-line comment at this point is, Civilization Online, I hope your fate is better than Civilization Network. As in, you know, you don't get shut down a couple of years afterwards.
I'm pretty sure everybody hopes it's better as an outcome than that.
Well, except the haters, but, yeah. You know, haters can...
Oh, I guess, yeah, you just want something to be bad for the sake of it. But even stuff that I don't anticipate being good, I would still prefer it to be pleasantly surprising.
So if you are listening to this show and you, A, first off, can play Civilization Online and are interested in playing Civilization Online and are willing to tell us about your experiences, there's 3 points there, then drop us a line, send us an email, thepolycast@gmail.com, and let us know how it's going. And we could talk about it on a future episode. Well, and the hope is also that once it's launched, that we will be able to relaunch CivCast, which was initially for Civilization Network, and have CivCast, so Social Civ, to be able to reflect Civilization Online in 2016. But we need at least one person who is able to play the game, interested in playing the game,
at least
willing to discuss the game verbally in English. There are a lot of steps to there, but that is the hope in 2016. We shall see.
So we are now part of corporate marketing research.
Only if you frustrated yourself.
Dave Hinkle asked us to participate in a survey from 2K. I did. It's a marketing survey. It's about how to sell games. But one thing is all the speculation that this survey precedes Civilization VI. So, that could be good news.
Of course. Yeah, there's not a lot that's directly game-related that I'm seeing so far. I'm looking at it now, and it's just like, how are you finding out about the game? What do you regularly use? That kind of stuff.
Yeah,
we'll see how long this goes.
Yeah, I mean, it's standard. Yeah, the first page speaks of demographics, like age and gender, and you got other questions about participation and purchasing in games, the time you spend playing turn-based strategy games, what social media you follow of online retailers and Civilization channels, and then which titles in the series you own. All but one of the 21 questions are required. The one that is not required to be completed in order to continue and ultimately complete the survey is order the most important things for you when buying a PC-based strategy title. Game mechanics, price point, system requirements, storyline, press reviews, and customer reviews. I found it interesting that that one was not required.
That was the hardest question of them all.
Yeah, it's also kind of important. Just a smidge important if you're designing a game to know what people prefer there. Seems like something you'd want to require from your survey takers.
Especially from a game publisher, seeing as how they hold the purse strings. They're going to be making the decisions.
Yeah, I don't care where you are in the design chain, though. That's something that really should be known regardless.
I took the survey as well, titled, We Need Your Help, Civ Fans. I think the survey took, I don't know, about 5 minutes for me to complete.
That's a long time.
Well, I was thinking about what it is that they were asking. Perhaps I took it a little too seriously. I don't know.
I put game mechanics number one, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of the others I don't rate very strongly at all.
Yeah, press reviews and customer reviews are a crapshoot.
Yeah, and then I put customer reviews a little higher, but what I had in mind when putting that was basically friends.
Yeah.
Or the mouth on it, which isn't an option there, which is, I would say, not so good survey design, because you can't put a very important thing that would cause someone to buy a game, and it's not like, you know, friends references is that unusual of a source for buying a game.
Yeah, word of mouth has been pretty darn important for a lot of things over the course of human history, long before we had anything even resembling a computer.
Yeah, and it's still very strong. It's not like it's fallen off that much. If you have a game that a lot of your friends enjoy, and you enjoy playing a lot of other games with those same friends, and they have similar tastes, that's going to weight your opinion a little bit more than a random person giving it one star and being like, I suck at this game, so I hate it. Like,
for even 5 or 10 people, as compared to one friend that you know and trust.
Yeah.
Although, hopefully, if they're your friend, you trust them, but...
Well, depends.
The last question was kind of open-ended, which was, in your own words, what are the things that you like most about Civilization? I honestly can't remember what I typed, but, like, to me, that would be a question, maybe, that you don't require. Because, of course, with that kind of survey, someone could just type in the number 1 or the letter A or any kind of character at all, and it would go through. But I agree, it's definitely marketing focus, and it makes sense that the Firaxis Games community manager who works for 2K Games is the one that is promoting this, clearly coming from 2K. I don't remember them doing something like this before. How useful is it, air quote, to 2K? How much is it going to influence future decisions at 2K and Firaxis as compared to, say, what is being discussed on Civilization forums? They're probably trying to get people that would not maybe otherwise contribute to forums, except seeing as how he promoted it on the 2K forums and Civ community forums, maybe he's trying to get, again, people who either don't register an account there, or they do so and they say very little in response to actually provide some kind of input. There's no known end date for the survey, but I would say, just anecdotally, if you complete it within a month, so you complete it by mid-December, the link will probably still be active. Don't know what they have in mind exactly. We don't know if they're going to report on any kind of results. There's no mention of it, so probably not, although you could ask after the fact. How's it going? Hopefully 2K Games and Firaxis will not only look at the responses to the survey, but the conversation that is happening around the survey. And in fact, on CFC, someone said in response to Dave, there's some issues with the survey. And Dave said, can you elaborate? And it was a relatively quick response, and other people have kind of chimed in. So even if he does not respond again, hopefully he takes that, which helps not only future survey designing, because you don't want it to go in and say, okay, so guys, we have this survey, and we went and we changed it. Okay, yeah, and then that's, yeah. What are you doing with the results that you've already gotten? But that combined with the discussion that comes up on the forums about why didn't you ask this question? Because I forget who it was, or it might have been a couple of people, but they said, how come there wasn't a question on here about what things you don't like about Civ? Because there was like the open-ended question at the end about what you do like about Civ. Could be about the content, it could be about the process, it could be about both of those things. And I think in terms of the quotes that I got from CFC, the one that matched your reflection of people not being particularly happy would be Westwall.
Yeah.
What a disappointing survey, having less to do with Civ and more to do with impersonal corporate marketing research. It's an insult to fans, quite frankly. I would not go so far as to say it's an insult to fans.
No, but I think it's a misunderstanding. This is a survey posted on the forums, and we immediately believe it to be something related to Firaxis and maybe Civilization VI, and we find out that it's simply a marketing survey.
Yeah.
So it's very different. People reading game design into it. From the comments I've been reading, one in particular, or two in particular, that this survey is about how to more efficiently sell their broken, unfinished games with pretty graphics, asking if what they like and what they dislike about the games. I don't think that's the point here. This is mainly for marketing, or yes, only for marketing.
Oh, yeah, this had nothing to do with any particular game.
No.
Surely them wanting to see what the community would tell them.
Oh, they want to see what people are looking at, basically.
Yeah, and how they can sell their games more efficiently. And I don't mind that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. That's standard. I mean, you don't want to put money into sending a message to relatively few people when you have more efficient avenues to go. It makes sense. There's no upside to anybody if they're blowing money on advertising to nothing.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't help anybody.
No. And they're not pretending or purporting to be something that it's not.
Yeah.
Either.
But the misunderstanding is there. This survey has something to do with the Civilization series and upcoming games. It's purely marketing.
Yes.
Primacy King 2 made the comment, I find it interesting that 2K is doing a survey about Civilization now. I don't know. I mean, it's essentially the end of 2015. We've had the release of the Rising Tide expansion pack for Civilization Beyond Earth. There's actually also been the release of Civilization Revolution 2 Plus, and now there's Civilization Online. That's three different Civilization titles being released in the same calendar year. Not necessarily targeting the same markets. Maybe some overlap, some not. But still, wow. It kind of seems like, okay, it's end of year. I don't remember 2K ever doing anything like this before. Well, I guess my question is, how come they didn't do this before? How come they're doing it now? But hey, now is better than never.
Well, the speculation is that it's for Civilization VI.
Speculate on whatever. It could also be for XCOM 2.
It could also be
for
anything.
It could also be for, like, 2K has lots of games. Maybe they want to see if they can convince Civ players to go play that horrible bureau.
I think it's misleading to say that a marketing survey is for any one game in particular.
Yeah, considering how big they are.
And it is true that question 14 asks, which of the following games do you own?
Yeah.
And it's not all 2K titles, let alone Firaxis titles.
Yeah, they have a section for very specifically not 2K / Firaxis titles. You can say if you own stuff like StarCraft 2 and Call of Duty and whatnot.
The only problem I have with that question, though, is it says check all that apply and the last option is none.
Hmm.
So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to check every single one of them, including none. Oops.
Now, it would be nice if the survey actually unchecks all the other ones anytime you check none, but I bet it doesn't. I didn't try it, but I bet it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Sadly. It goes to survey design, and I know especially Phil and I, we've actually, there's been less about the design of the survey itself, although I wanted to point that out, as opposed to, I think, first off, what questions are being asked, and then as we're getting at the misunderstanding and misconception about what the purpose of this survey is.
Yeah. I see less of the more overt stuff that really bugs me about surveys with the questions, but the partially is just the questions themselves are less interesting to me because they're not so game-related. They're just looking for sheer counts of who could check each box, which is, it's okay, I guess, considering they're just looking for counts of people who are going to be looking at the end results or whatever.
Yeah, it's more about breadth than depth as well. Scratching the surface of a lot of things, although perhaps this is a springboard, hopefully maybe for more in-depth survey that perhaps speaks to one or two of these general questions, and then based on that they decide, okay, we want more information about this, so we extrapolate less and we actually get more data on this. So that would be nice to see in 2016. I guess I hope it's not just they do this kind of once and we hear nothing about it again in the future, or there's no follow-up in some respect. I think the real test of this survey will be, how do you treat the end, the quote-unquote end, of the survey. What do you do with it, and how do you communicate that? When do you communicate that? That'll be the next step.
Yeah, I guess.
So, hey, we're doing the versus thing again, X thing versus Y thing, and for Bert, the fear and respect mechanic, how are we all using this?
Yes?
Actually, I don't think I specifically try to make them fear or respect me, it just kind of happens. And sometimes they start respecting me in the middle of me punching them into the ground, which is kind
of
funny.
Yeah, it's a lot of incidental.
Yeah, it's never the thing you think. Oh, you think it was, you'd get an army-sized respect while in the middle of you're punching them in the face. No, it's like, wow, you're so good with all your farms. Where do you get food for all those people? What? You think complimenting my farms is going to get me to stop punching you in the face?
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it's a nice addition to the game, and it certainly influences the AI's opinion of you, and if and when they go after you, and who they may or may not ally with to go after you, or quite frankly, each other. But kind of what Mackie's getting at, it's I pay attention to it as it comes up. And then if I'm thinking about an agreement, I guess that would be the one exception. If there's an agreement that I want with an AI for a particular period of time, and I realize, oh, their respect of me is only two or three, maybe if I got to five or six, and that I would then maybe try to do something, something little, like, oh, why don't I go ahead and complete this wonder? That'll get a small increase in respect. And then I can get this agreement, which often means that by getting that agreement, I can then use whatever benefits I'm getting to then go after that AI first, or that AI later while I go after other AI. Because it all goes back to the diplomacy is the end of a laser. Can't be the end of a spear we're in space now. It's the end of a laser.
Pew!
Mackie and I are on the same wavelength, just like the laser. Pew pew!
So what color is your laser?
Red.
See, I went for green. Looks cooler.
Well, Mackie, we are themed for the season now, aren't we?
True, I hadn't thought of that. I don't think my brain has registered its post-Thanksgiving yet.
You're forgiven for now. It is the season.
You build units and you kill the other enemy's units, and then they say some things. I think they're like salty and tears or something, and then you win the game.
Well, there's certainly entertaining comments when they're being salty about things.
Well, yes. I think they could use a little bit of tweaking for better plausibility, because the whole, yeah, I like your farms because you're rolling over me with tanks thing is a little strange, but yeah, whatever. It's not that bad. It doesn't hurt anything. It's amusing.
Or as we've talked in the context of diplomacy before, hey, your energy reserves suck. I dislike you. Well, I think you dislike me more because I'm using that energy to rush by some units to squash you.
Mm-hmm.
So our general perspective on the fear and respect mechanic, which is it falls a little short, other than the entertaining aspect.
Yeah, it's entertaining, but it's definitely used some improvement.
I'm glad it's in the game. I hope they don't take it away because there are issues with the implementation.
Yeah, it's not like Pact of Secrecy, but yeah.
Yeah, I would like this to see something like this in a Civilization VI, for example, but it needs some help.
Yeah, I agree.
Fun concept. Just needs a little tweaking to be actually something I have to pay attention to instead of something I just go hee at every once in a while.
The respect mechanic functionally moves up and down, and the fear mechanic is a waste of time. So, yeah. Plus, the AI still has its own internal number that blatantly ignores both of these.
More numbers.
Yeah. Good stuff. Captain Mike P made a thread over on the CivE strategy and tips forum. Yay! Because we actually asked for that sort of thing, and somebody did it. Anyways, he says, how to survive Rising Tide Apollo? And without being horribly mean, I think this is somebody who used to play at Prince on Civ 5 who was starting to take on Apollo. So it's kind of like somebody going from Prince to Emperor in Civ 5. And then people who played at Emperor for a long time would look at this and go, what? It looks like it's just more of an initial somebody just getting to here and saying, this is what I found worked. And it may have, but not really consistently useful. His suggestions were to stay isolated. Blatantly ignore the AI. Don't play with the AI diplomatically at all.
Is this vanilla?
No, this is...
Well, no, I mean, yeah. Is it, like, if this was a comment for vanilla, I might not have the Spock eyebrow right now.
Yeah, okay, but that also lies into a further down point, but it's related to the stay isolated, which is don't try to suck up to the AI. Apparently, the AI will hate you regardless of what you do. Any relationships that release cooperating are painfully brief, and being allied is a hell of an anomaly. You should invest in killing your neighbors, not friends, being friends with them. Okay, putting those two together.
I agree with that last line, but you still need temporary workings.
Putting those two together, I would like to point out that, yes, you can be diplomatic with the AI. The thing is, people who say that they're still psychopathic, which, I mean, they are basically still psychopathic AIs, haven't stopped to look at what they like. Each AI has a series of things that they like, and if you do those things, like expanding your orbital coverage area, making lots of food, or lots of trade routes, or lots of spies, or whatever.
Having synergy in your virtues.
That too. There's lots of things that any particular AI will particularly like in that particular game. I don't know if it modifies every game or if it's just like this, Utama likes this haunts always. I think that's partly it. But anyways, they like those things. So if you do those things, which in general are things you should do anyways for your empire, and they're not all military related, then they will like you more. Of course, generally, you will also lose a lot of respect because you have a smaller army or blah, 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 just because the AI is dumb like that. Also, go take a look at their relationships, and if they hate somebody and you tried to be friends with that person, well, then they're not going to like you very much. And of course, not being isolated, i.e. go make agreements and buy services from somebody and sell services to them, that will also make them respect you, guaranteed. Build wonders.
Yeah, that's what really got me, that comment when he's talking about in the bird context, like, you don't want to make agreements?
Yeah, that
really?
I think we can change this line to don't try to suck up to all of the AI. I think
yeah.
You need to pick a couple.
Yeah, pick a couple. And then once you pick a couple and you get very cooperative and or allied, that sort of makes the other ones fall in line or they'll get slaughtered, which is back to that bottom line.
Yeah.
I mean, you can be investing in killing your neighbors and being friends with your not neighbors, the ones that are slightly further away. So you can play nice with the ones that aren't initial targets.
Yeah.
Well,
that's standard.
And it's really easy. Every turn or every other turn, them making comments about something you are or are not doing.
And in fact, now with Rising Tide, unlike in previous Civ titles, including Vanilla Beyond Earth, if you go after, if you declare war on someone that another faction doesn't like, they will like you more. It's not just, I'm only going to contact you if you declare on someone that I don't think you should declare on. Well, we both hate this person, so I declared on them. Meh.
Yeah.
You're a warmongering menace. You declared on my worst enemy.
Heart.
Yep.
Take advantage of that.
Yeah. Again, you don't have to. Yes, if you can't figure it out, then it would seem horrible, horrible, and then you can go totally isolated. But even going domination, you can make longtime allies the last target.
Well, yeah, keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Yeah, that happens. Otherwise, he loves spies, which is great. I like spies too.
Yeah, I agree with this point on the list.
Rank up spies, get lots of spies. They steal tech, science, money, other stuff. It's all free stuff. No one gets hurt with it, except for maybe the spy if they accidentally die. But otherwise, again, there are some AIs that love it that when you're spying, even when you're spying on them, sometimes they think that's a
thing. That's true.
You get respect for spying on them because they're, I don't know, weird.
Well, if all you're doing is siphoning energy or science that you get out of thin air, it doesn't take anything away from them.
Yeah. Yeah, they make comments like, ooh, look at all those spies. You must, like, really be worried about me. And that makes them respect you or something.
It's like, yeah, you go with that interpretation.
Don't mind me as I raise all the levels in your city and then flip them all at once.
Whatever stops you from crying and just whimpering at night so you can go to sleep, sure.
Yeah, pretty much.
And even if the spy does get killed.
Who cares?
Well, yeah, it's not like, oh, that's the end, the slot's dead. No, you recruit another spy relatively quickly. And there isn't also the AI saying, hey, we caught one of your spies. Stop it.
The other two main points were have a well-balanced army. Your definition of well-balanced is sort of depends on the situation. But if you have water cities or cities on the coast, have a navy. If you have a neighbor who is land connected to you, have an army. Have your random TACnets if you have them, or orbital lasers if you got confused as to what you were doing. have some fighters in the air, have some ranged units, have some melee units, and lots of defensive buildings. And yes, yes, you should do that. Because the AI always looks at your army versus their army and will attack you just for giggles if you don't have, like, the biggest army on the planet.
Captain Mike P's point about, I guarantee that your stockpile of floatstone, titanium, peroxide, xenomass, and oil will come in handy in the late game. If you're primarily, if not exclusively, on the water, not so much, because those units...
Not so much late game?
Well, are you getting to the late game, first off? I find that I end games more quickly if it's on, if it's on the water than on land, which is essentially the complete opposite experience, say, in Civilization V. But I don't need lots of stockpiles of these strategic resources. It helps in those situations where, oh, can't quite get to that with my Navy. So that's fine. It would be nice to have a handful of resources to have some specific, even melee units to go in there and take the city after, say, it's been bombarded from the ocean and or ranged units and or ranged units that are on land. But I don't really feel the need to stockpile most of the time, in part because you're also taking territory, then you're getting those resources as you go. It's a reward. So I'm not actively thinking, oh my gosh, I should have like 20, 30 sources of. It's, no, I only need a few right now, and then those few will help me get more, and then that 10 will help me get 15, that 15 will help me get 20, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Then he talks about virtues. Oh, industry and might. That's sort of where everything kind of falls apart. Well, okay, it fell apart long before this point, but there's no real specific virtue or virtue combination that works better on Apollo than it others do. All virtues are useful on Apollo to the point of no virtues are useful on Apollo. I mean, might. It really doesn't affect the game very much.
Just go
going
might,
various minor strategies like, yeah, go might early, kill lots of aliens, get lots of science, or go industry. If there's a lot of stations around you, you can generate tons of cash out of that. And, or if you have basic resources, then you want to go industry prosperity, because then you'll get lots of energy and production out of them.
Which is all part and parcel we've talked about on previous episodes, when,
yeah.
Again, we're specifically talking about Apollo.
Yeah, but industry might isn't a requirement. Prosperity isn't a requirement. Knowledge could almost be used, sort of, except it doesn't go bad. For Apollo, things that actually are useful go further down in the thread. Evgenij mentions that he usually picks up the diplomatic perk that adds plus science per deal per service that you initiate. So since you can only have 5, it adds a certain amount of science, and if you fill up all 5 of your services, then you can get lots of bonuses early in the game. That's provided you actually expand and up your diplomatic capital sufficiently to be able to pay for all of those. But even if you take that perk and then you only choose the really cheap ones, so the +3 per perk, that still works just as well as paying for all the expensive ones. So you can get a science boost early in the game, which normally you wouldn't have because there's not a huge jump in science without doing something else. You could always use the convert production to science early in the game for this very similar effect. If you don't need that city to be producing yet another building, people are talking about also, explorer spam, and then going purity and knowledge to run around and grab all of them. And also researching the leash ability, which is a Harmony 2 affinity level requirement. And then you have your explorers leash alien units and then go send them in to pillage the alien nests, and as well as go sit on runes so that you can hold the runes from the AI till your explorer can actually show up and get it. Apparently, fully attempting a domination victory once on Apollo lead Epic Western to suggest, go get phasal transporters, and then just land on them. Which, in general, is not a horrible thing. You can fully upgrade, i.e. go hybrid, so get your 6-6, 7-7, 8-8 levels, get phasal transporters, have mass spammed units before you actually got to that point so that they're cheaper, and then just drop phasal transporters around whoever you are targeting and, like, within a bunch of units. Pretty easy to run somebody over if you do that, if they don't have their orbital area completely covered. And if they do, or you don't have the initial range, well, there's those satellites that give you extra range. So you might have to actually drop in a couple of those to get far enough over so that you can use the phasal transporters.
From Defiant Mars, ideas for more units. This is kind of extensive.
Well, yeah, he talks about explorers, fifth unit core affinities, and hybrid units.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a lot of detail here.
Oh, yeah. Then this thread was started before Civilization Beyond Earth Rising Tide was released.
Oh, you're right.
Been a bit perturbed by the holes in affinity units, so I've been trying to come up with names and concepts for various affinity units. This thread is meant to propose and discuss potential names and bonuses for affinity explorers, names for hybrid units that did not get upgrades in Rising Tide. Essentially, what he does is for each one of the affinities, Harmony, Purity, and Supremacy, through the explorers, through the fifth unit core affinities, and then the hybrid units, giving names and particular abilities, including strategic resources required and or affinity levels required in order to reach them. And I think just on a first pass, having explorer ability upgrades, in part where, look at Civilization V, and the scouts, for example, it's, hey, guess what? We finally get some upgrades for those guys. And then explorers, none. Now, you could say that, well, explorers do get upgrades, just not based on the units, but, say, through virtues and quests. So I guess in that respect, I'm not feeling it, quote-unquote, as much.
The abilities being proposed here are interesting, and they're relatively straightforward as to what's being given as well. Immunity to miasma for Harmony, extra combat strength when defending against aliens for Purity, an extra module for Supremacy. That all makes sense thematically as well. Visioner module for Supremacy, combat strength when attacking aliens, or HP per turn outside friendly territory for Purity, and then less damage from leashing aliens, or plus one movement for Harmony. Yeah, I like it. It would make just a little bit of extra flavor to the explorers.
I really like how Defiant Mars outlines the military approach of the different affinities. And when I read that, I got really excited. Oh, I want to play again. But then I also get depressed because this is all so exciting, but it's not in the game. It's not possible. I don't see how this can work the core game we have in its current state. It's that's so interesting, the different play styles and what they focus on and how they approach military conquest. But it's a fantasy. That's what I get from reading this.
What, the ideas for new units?
No,
being a fantasy?
No, he goes on to have, like, specific posts just for Harmony, for Purity, for Supremacy, and whatnot, and how that would play out throughout the game. So, yeah, these are
exactly
major changes. And I agree, there's a lot of potential here.
Yeah, so Harmony, Focus, Mobility, and Miasma. For Purity, about defense and brute force. Supremacy is about battlefield positioning.
Mm-hmm. And it's building a little bit on stuff you're seeing to an extent in Rising Tide already, but it's really fleshing it out.
Yeah, it looks like the basis for a very nice mod.
Yeah.
And it looks like it is basically filling in a hole in the game. Part of a hole, anyways. And only partly filling it. Pretty big hole.
Yeah.
Surprised there just isn't anything about what he would do with air units. Seeing how a lot of people are like, so there's hybrid stuff for a lot of these unit classes, but air? No? What? Aww.
No air, no subs.
A very long and fleshed out proposal for affinities and specific units and specific modifiers and everything, and it's impressive, but like Mad said, it's filling a hole in the game as well.
But would it actually work if this came out as a mod? With these different units and the diversity in the affinities, would it work? Would it play out?
Maybe.
Well, for in order to be fully realized, especially as primarily a single-player game, there would then be questions of, so, how does the AI handle this now? How does it work with the other mechanics in the game? Like, it's a good start, and it's a good basis for a mod, but I think there would have to be more for it to feel as immersive as it could be, but it's a good start.
We're talking about an AI that, in the game we currently play, will embark its units next to enemy units that can shoot. I mean, I don't know that the AI would necessarily need to be able to handle these new mechanics in a very deep fashion. It could just pick something and build the units like it always does, and it would probably perform similarly to how it does right now, which is not very well.
Oh, I'm certainly speaking of a larger issue, no doubt, but it's if you're going to make changes to the units, even if you set aside the AI, I think it would positively impact gameplay otherwise. As I said, it's a good start.
Yeah.
But I think the next step would be to actually see someone take the reins and mod it, and then playtest it. Get people to playtest the mod. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. This sounds good, like in a design premise, and then to actually run with it. At the very least, they're like getting excited. He wants to play again.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that, as soon as you've got that excitement, there's the will and the want for this to work. And so if you've got that, then you've got the drive and you've got people that are going to be interested. And it's like, I'm not very good at design, but I'm good at playtesting. I can give you feedback. And then start developing a team to work on this. And it's not something that you're going to, you know, finish next weekend.
But you need a base game for the mod. And that's my point, the depressing part. Would this work in a multiplayer environment for Beyond Earth? Is there room for this kind of diversity?
I think there's room for it, but would it necessarily be preferred over what we're doing right now?
Yep.
In a multiplayer, now I'm not necessarily convinced of that, no. But that doesn't preclude it being beneficial.
I think the diversity is appealing from a multiplayer standpoint because it makes each of the choices you make play out very differently. But you're getting to the point where balancing it is on the order of trying to balance for something like StarCraft. So it's not going to be very easy to make each of the choices remotely equally viable. But it's not impossible either. It's just for one person working on a mod, making that balance for multiplayer in a competitive environment would probably be really difficult.
Or just in general even, because say you find out that you go this route, that person goes that route, be it AI or another human. Either you pick the route that that one will slaughter or that you'll slaughter them. That is entirely plausible in single player as well. It's not just a multiplayer problem. But it is more shown in multiplayer because humans will take a look at that.
And yeah, it can come down to timings too. Like the AI is not going to milk windows on you very often. So if you're exposed for like 20 turns, good player and MP might be able to hit you in that window. AI probably won't be able to do it and often can't even really beat you at war when it should be able to easily. So, yeah, it could manifest in single player, especially if you're the one using that window, certainly, but not going to be like multiplayer.
As a viable mod, and then if it's viable and then it becomes engaging and then it starts becoming popular, then perhaps it will get the attention of developer Firaxis Games and publisher 2K Games, because then they can see, oh, they took a concept and they implemented it such as they could as a modder, because there's only certain things that you can reasonably get to. If it proves itself in that way, then perhaps it can be used as a basis for maybe not Rising Tide itself, but future expansion or patch or what have you, because we know there's at least one more patch coming, although this seems like something more than you would just get in a patch, then perhaps we could see it again in the future. Because there is precedent for that, for mods coming out, and sometimes it's, oh, we weren't even thinking about that as a possibility. Why don't we go ahead and then take what we see in the modding community, since people are playing and enjoying it, and bring it into the base game.
So you want to stuff more features into the base game?
Well, it's not even so much stuffing more features as it is fleshing out of what they've already got here. Like, for example, the hybrid units. Just going a little bit farther for what's already there.
Well, to me, it looks good on paper. I'm not convinced it would work when playing the game.
Which is why I think a modder needs to go and say, okay, I'm going to actually try to do this first of all, and then play it themselves, and then get other people to play it, and see if it actually translates into something worthwhile.
Maybe if this was a mod for Civilization V, maybe? I could see it work. But that's for Beyond Earth. That's the problem here.
Because I was actually even thinking more that I could see it for Rising Tide than, say, a Civilization V, because of what we already have with the result of Rising Tide. Again, like back to the hybrid units. But I think for both of us, we would actually need to see, can it go beyond the step of just talking about it and sounding good on paper? Would it work, and also, would it be fun?
Yeah.
Sounds like it would be fun, but sometimes it's,
yeah, how's the balance going to play out?
How can we make it fun? How can we make it engaging? How can we make it something that's actually adding something to the game as opposed to, well, it's in the game and nobody touches it, or people just touch on it here and there in very specific situations. You want it to be an active consideration of gameplay.
Exactly.
Which I think goes to our criticism of the fear and respect mechanic right now in Rising Tide. We don't want it to be a fad within the game. We want it to be something more substantial than that and longer lasting. Man, that sounds like an advertisement for gum, but...
Long lasting fresh mint flavor. I don't know. Does miasma taste like mint? It looks kind of minty.
Does miasma taste like mint? That could be the episode title.
I wasn't trying to give you an episode title, but you're welcome. Galagus has posted a thread about an affinity building overhaul, exclusive building sets for each core and hybrid affinity. Yeah, so there's specific examples here.
And as compared to the last thread, with considerable help, he intends to mod this.
Oh, excellent. Because there's actually a lot of buildings. Like, Purity gets from that level, too. It's monumental architecture. I guess you're building little mini Stonehenges? I don't know. Oh, it requires floatstone. Floating Stonehenge. There you go.
Oh, hey, there's a reason to research the tech that allows you to work floatstone. Oh.
But for Affinity Level 2 building, I don't know.
Yeah, good luck building it at Affinity Level 2, unless you're thinking what you can do. And
that's not hard to achieve.
Depends on where it is on the tech tree.
Yeah, he might have the ability to mine floatstone up, too.
You need to move floatstone to somewhere, or at least just drop the cost of the tech.
Floatstone for something at level 2, I don't know about that. That might be a little iffy. Because you're only going to be able to build this retroactively once you do research floatstone. I mean, like, there's a sky crane later on that's for purity level 7 that requires floatstone. Okay, that makes sense, because you push that affinity pretty hard to get to that point.
Oh, yeah, I would probably suggest any building or whatever doesn't require the affinity-related thing until affinity 4 or more. I would assume that the first 3 affinity levels should be without the special resource. But then, of course, you also make them sufficiently weak that spamming it isn't the thing to do constantly.
Well, with the monumental architecture, he's kind of got that already, but requiring floatstone.
Yeah, but also
the city has access to floatstone.
It should be moved up a few purity levels, because it's base giving +3 culture and +3 production, plus that plus three again on the sources of floatstone, copper, and gold in the city.
And the quest gives an extra 2 culture or 2 production.
Yes, exactly. That's like a high thing, and why is it all the way down here at level 2 purity?
Yeah, no, that's a massive boost, especially if you land in a situation where you can get tons of that. Like, that's better than most buildings for a while.
Yeah, I would cut the quest, and if you're going to have that for Floatstone, then there should be something comparable for Axite and Xenomass as well.
Well, Xenomass itself is also the highest yield boost in the game. But that's on purpose, because that's part of the definition of the Harmony side, is that it lacks in a lot of areas, especially science, but it has very high yield strategics, unlike the other two that have low yield strategics but high other stuff. So that's kind of the point of balance there.
Yeah, the equivalent Harmony level 2 building is +4 energy, it's xenofuel plants, +4 energy base, and then +4 energy from your algae, plankton, petroleum, xenomass. That, in the quest, is gives you some energy or +3 science from the xenomass. That seems a little more reasonable. You don't necessarily have a ton of the algae and plankton.
No.
Or any of those, you know.
Well, base game, like actual game, ignoring what he's got there, he kind of dropped a building. As in, the only building Harmony gets for science, in base game you have 2 buildings at Harmony level 2. Again, this is a balance thing. In the base game, each of the affinities have the same number of buildings, but they're spread out differently. So Purity and Supremacy tend to have later or mid to later buildings, but they also end up being better. But whereas Harmony has 2 early buildings, but they give you decent boosts for that. What he really should be doing is not focusing on big numbers, because he seems to like big numbers. Because when you start adding things up, like that Xeno Sanctuary, +2 culture and +2 science from chicken, chelonia, coral, eggs, reef, forest, nests.
If you've got one of those ocean cities or ocean side cities that happens to pick up like the chitin and the coral and the eggs, which you can have very often, plus it's got some forest on it, that's just going to be freaking ridiculous.
That's everything with the kitchen sink then.
And reefs? Almost every single coastal tile is a reef.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
You've got that which requires Harmony level 5, and speaking of later affinity and not having a very good output, Mantle, purity level 8, requires floatstone, plus 0.5 science and plus 0.5 energy for each virtue synergy. Why would I bother with that?
Yeah, not even a whole number on that.
Also, virtue synergies tend not to be big in number in the game. Like, you tend not to have a lot of them.
Yeah.
4, maybe 5, depending by the end of the game on how cultured you showed. More culture, more synergies, but obviously, in a generalized game, you're not going to get a huge amount of them.
And similarly, Terran Landscaping, purity level 3, +1 culture and +1 diplomatic capital for every virtue synergy. Okay, yeah, there's quest for +4 culture or +2 food, but still, underwhelming as compared to some of these others, which are so overwhelming. I mean, I like the idea, and I think a lot of what we're getting at is what you're having in terms of the number of effects, although in some cases, yeah, like the Xeno Sanctuary, way too many possibilities there. But as a concept, overhauling the affinity buildings, okay. And I like some of these, and unlike some other people on the panel, I'm not particularly concerned that you have low-level affinity tiers to achieve some of them, but the numbers, He also does say that, I plan on no tech requirement or very easy tech requirements for affinity buildings to maximize freedom in the tech web, which makes me wince almost more than anything, because the idea that we've talked about before is maximize freedom in the tech web. Now, you want to focus that a little bit more. If you're going to tie it to an affinity, then fine, have it going down a path where you're going to be able to get up in affinity levels. But if it's a very easy tech requirement, yet at the same time you require a high level affinity or no tech requirement at all, and you have low tier requirement, then it becomes either you're never going to build it or you're always going to build it. And I think that defeats the point.
Well, no, the concept for less tech requirements for the affinity, I mean, and you can say this with the exact same thing for the hybrid units and stuff like that. Having those tech requirements means they need a location on the tech web. And you can't overload some of the early tech so badly that these are the techs you're always going to get. So therefore, you end up pushing out stuff further out so that's more even. But the problem I see with removing tech requirements for that is all you're going to tech at that point is directly to your goal. So if you're going purity and you go for the purity victory, then that's the only tech you're going to get. You're not going to go outside of what is required to get that, which actually reduces the use of the tech web, not maximizing freedom. You'll have the freedom to ignore the entire tech web except for the exact victory goal, tech path, which really does defeat the purpose of having choice. So yeah, I would agree with Dan. I would agree with Dan that the buildings and that would have tech requirements, but yes, you place them in such a way that you are going to fall over those buildings and, you know, hybrid units and all that at the time that you would naturally gain those things, not like throwing, say, the force level affinity building in a tech location that you would actually end up getting there after you hit like affinity level 10. Does that mean adding more tech to the tech web? Probably, but so.
But there's only one third of the choices available because there's an asymmetry. Buildings of different affinities cannot coexist in the same city. I would like that to be nationwide, but it reduces the choice to one third.
Well, or different, because there's hybrid buildings in here, too.
Oh.
Yeah, the common about affinity buildings cannot be built in a city that hosts buildings of another affinity, except some of these buildings are hybrid.
Yeah.
So, which is it?
Well, that's broken.
Well, it's a question of, are you assuming that the game plays as for right now, as in, quote-unquote, hybrid is just the sum of the two, not something different, or is it that the quote-unquote hybrid affinity numbers would also be on the tech web and not individual? So there's the pure route, and then there would be a separate hybrid or something. Because if you had to manage hybrid, that would just be weird and bad.
So a good start, but some refinement on the numbers and the requirements and clarification of some of the premise here as well.
Well, I really like the asymmetry approach. I would like to see more of that in the game, that the factions differ, units differ more, play styles differ.
Oh, yeah, that should exist.
I feel it's lacking.
There are ways to get there, and then there are things like this.
And Galgus also at the end credits Defiant Mars for feedback as I was designing this. Hey, Galgus, why don't you go and help Defiant Mars mod what he's talking about while he's helping you design what you're going to mod here, and maybe some or all of what we said, once you actually put it into practice, maybe we'll be proven wrong in some respects. I don't mind that.
Oh, it's not wrong. It just takes iterations of work and finding an actual balance.
Just based on what I'm seeing, I actually would prefer to try what Defiant Mars has outlined as compared to Galgus, but that could just be, again, how it's presented. We'll see. Under episode 242 feedback from Ryaka at Virtues. Why exactly do you people skip the Free Settler if they open with Prosperity anyway? Free Settler, then Explorer charges, to Might for Domination or Knowledge for Peaceful Approach seems such an obvious synergy to me. One gets the Prosperity, Synergy bonus, and the two extra Virtues count towards the Tier 1 Synergy bonus. Especially if followed by Might to farm aliens, as one will be missing two Virtues for the free one anyway, so practically the Settler only costs one Virtue. And I think, to me, that just goes back to not so much that it's a bad choice, but I feel like I'm going to be more ahead more often by going the way we talked about on episode 242. It's not one's good and one's bad. It's just one's good and the other's better.
So one is bad relative to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Phil.
Making sure I understood correctly.
Lumping that comment from Erica with legalized freedom, I'm always amazed by how diverse experiences can be in Civ. I just finished a Chungsu domination-only game, Apollo Standard, Standard Primordial, with only domination victory available. Air units were probably my primary military force. Their range, both attack and rebase, has grown since vanilla and is obscene. Once they are upgraded and tiered up a bit with three in each city, a constantly advancing group of three or four cities worth is unstoppable, at least by the AI, which in fairness doesn't do enough, if anything, to counter. I found the hybrid units to be quite useful and in some cases necessary. Many seem to be far more powerful than the standard units. I found the standard units to be very underpowered in the late game now. They do require resources, but in the current version of the game, the player swims in resources. Okay, so yes, in some cases, necessary, yes. I can see some cases where they are necessary. I think more cases it's preferable, not required. But that also goes to, okay, hybrid units, which hybrid units do I want, when, how many, for what purpose, as compared to, again, I go back to naval support, or quite honestly, even air support. I don't feel the need to invest much in hybrid units, or, and I think this goes to something we talked about the last episode as well, by the time I get that hybrid unit, that's great, but it's a novelty because in another vein, I can have a standard unit that is comparably good enough, or at least in combination, doesn't require a resource, doesn't cost as much to buy, not going to take as long to construct, and I end up with the same result. Gaga Extreme, who was guest on episode 235, it was funny to hear them talk about the Civ spinoff, Civilization Online, as if the whole thing was more than a cash grab to get player money and a portfolio enhancement for the company to make it more attractive for investors. Quote, see, we have a foot in the Asian market, unquote. The idea that they'd actually put effort into the game to add some sort of Civ-like feel is precious. Okay. And I think that just goes to, we are, again, are not the target. Not just because we don't live in Korea, but for the fact that it's a massive multiplayer online role-playing game with some strategic elements.
And hey, man, one can hope.
Always can hope.
Hmm.
And then, Ryaka, this game looks like nothing to do with Civ, but damn those character models. I almost wish I was bisexual so I could fully appreciate both of them. Wow. Well.
Well, you could aesthetically appreciate both models without having to be that. I mean...
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Before we get to this closing on the last regularly scheduled episode recording of Polycast in 2015, we have a few items to discuss in terms of end of year and into 2016 for the show.
Christmas is coming, and we have our annual special live event on the 12th of December. This one being on 2015, of course, because soon it won't be. We need questions, comments, investigative reporting, and
wait,
things that are related to Civ and strategy games in general, or even Polycast-specific inquiries, because, you know, if you're asking about weird people, yeah, might as well start here.
We're the poster children for weird. Okay, then.
Anyways, so ask lots of questions. Doesn't matter.
It's weird for us to be the poster children for weird when this is an audio-only show. But anyway, yeah, it's still fine.
Apparently, we're going to show up. We have no actual list of things to talk about, so y'all have to generate it for us.
Yes, the AKA Dan would like a brief respite from finding topics for this show.
I recommend you pick topics that I would approve of.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
We'll make it a great Christmas.
Yep.
You know, let's give a preview. Let's answer one question right now from the buzzing. When will there be a Polycast After Dark? Here's what you do. Step one, turn off all the lights in your room. Step two, close the blinds. Three, you're done. It's Polycast After Dark. You're welcome.
Right. Actually, no, there is a third step, which is to either listen to Polycast live or bring up one of our post-produced episodes, because otherwise it'll just be after dark. There won't be any Polycast.
Otherwise, you just lock yourself in your room in the dark for nothing.
Who's to say you can't refer to that as Polycast?
Huh? Not necessarily for nothing, but...
There you go.
Oh, that's true. You could just think of one of us. You don't have to listen, I guess, but we prefer you listen.
And that's in the future, the near future. Speaking of the near future...
Yeah, 2016, so we're still here for 28 more episodes next year. Yeah. Modcast will have about 6, and Turncast will have 13, because we keep playing on Saturdays and Danny's getting more material, so, you know, it's inevitable.
This has been episode 243 of Polycast. I'm Dan Q, and I've been joined by our guest co-host, Ruben.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, what?
I mean, it stopped making sense a long time ago.
Oh, I like your implication that we perhaps made sense at some point. Makalua.
Yeah, at some point, probably, when we started talking about podcast things, it all just dissolved into blah, 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 blah for the listener.
Me and team.
Presenting you a dish best served with salt.
And magic.
Salt. Still the most powerful reader.
And what you feel after playing a game.
All right, we should be live now. So, go ahead, guest.
All right, with my blatant lack of enthusiasm, welcome to episode 243. I'm joined here by...
Pause, hold on. I'm just going to say, because, like, Phil and Mackie were talking over Ruben.
You mean coughing?
What?
Hold on, pause.
Are you lagging?
I think I'm getting double. Hold on.
Oh.
Turn that off.
We forgot to turn off the stream in the back.
Phil and Mackie were not talking when you were saying this, so no.
Talking over it. I thought I had already gotten that pause.
It was just too awkward for me to interrupt, so
I didn't know what to say. It took me a moment to figure out what was going on that would cause Magin to say that.
I'm joined here by...
Oh, then introduce us.
So I introduce you. The mean team, Dan,
concrete
Bakalua.
Over your...
Oh, okay, whoa, okay, now we're going to talk
this
over
time. This time I was talking over you. Yeah.
Speaking of oops, you don't pay attention to this. Could be crying sad face.
Who's a crying sad face?
Who's a crying... Well...
I don't know. So hi, three other people on the call. Any opinions?
No, Mackie and I have covered it sufficiently. We can go on to the next topic. We're that good, Mackie.
No.
Oh, well.
See, we've been podcasting longer than the rest of them.
That doesn't mean our opinions are necessarily better.
Especially over the last several minutes. Not that I mind.
Speaking of paying attention.
Nope, still not.
Yeah, he was suspiciously absent during this conversation. I was like,
Well, it was both a topic segue and also a direct comment to the first edit. It served both purposes well.
I do have a question.
Or respond to the corresponding threads on a Paladin Civilization site. Seriously, I can't just call it CFC. As soon as I saw that, I'm like, CFC, but I'm trying to stay in the real world.
Don't go to civilization.com. Don't do it.
Don't do it. Never go there.
I have a face full of miasma.
No, that's Xenomass.
Oh, is that what you're... Okay. I'll show you Xenomass.
Think about the color of Xenomass and your favorite phrase.
Real Mackie, why would...
What? It's a favorite thing that Phil says all the time.
Yeah, I know, but...
I approve.
It really...
I don't know...
It really ought to be moved
like, up. I don't know... Go ahead, Mackie.
Insert Dan hitting a very long piece as I talked about somebody, because that's really what all this is.
What?
Yeah, you don't have to be. I mean, you could find them attractive.
You don't have to want to bang it to think it's attractive.
Thank you, Mackie. I was trying to go for something.
Oh, subtle? Oh, sorry.
That was Mackie being subtle. We don't do subtle, do we?
Record date November 28th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.